There are huge questions about it. In the first week in January, with Hillary winning on Diebold and Obama winning on in-hand count.
Just because elections returns are front and center in the frantic up-to-the-second news cycle, that doesn't mean she'll dwell on this particular race. She's much more of a process person in her priorities.
Saying it doesn't have to be fast, it has to be accurate. The newspapers can wait. Lots of democracies wait while people actually count the ballots.
And even counterintuitively, instead of spreading her wings to bigger stages, she's decided there's much work to do right here at home.
Because I've learned so much about how big and troubled L.A. County is, I've stopped working statewide, though I advise several counties with that part, and we all consult with each other.
In the office, the philosophy is that elections is a collaborative process. If citizens trust the process, they'll engage in the process.
And that's it for Sprouts. I'm Kelly Barnes with Norma Martinez from Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. You've been listening to Do-It-Yourself Democracy, a People Without Borders presentation. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producers were Kelly Barnes and Norma Martinez at KPFK. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's the February 21st, 2008 show. Stay tuned. And that was a combination of Mike True and Mama Cass. What a mix. Anyway, as mentioned before, it's 101.1 FM and freakradio.org that you're tuned to. My name is Robert Norris, and the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And what we're looking at tonight is a special interview at 6:45 with a writer named Bill Simpich. And Bill is a writer for Counterpunch. Another writer for Counterpunch. We had a man on Sunday who was also writing on the Iraqi war and the need to bring together broad coalitions to fight the Demopublicans and the Obama-Clintonites who like to talk a nice game, but whose votes all have funded the war and continue to fund the military appropriations in spite of their rhetoric to the contrary. And he's going to be talking in about 45 minutes or so, 40 minutes or so, on some of the background of the Iraqi war. And we'll talk with him. You'll be able to call in and talk. And you can actually call in and talk now on issues that I'm raising and issues you think I should be raising at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And I will answer you. I got a number of things I'm trying to set up here. I guess what I'm going to do, just to kind of roll forward, one of the tapes I hoped I have doesn't look like it's here. Typical situation. I'm going to play a little bit more from the mass debate that went on outside the Berkeley City Council about a week ago on Tuesday, when the Berkeley City Council weakened but did not entirely eliminate its "we don't think you're appropriate here in Berkeley recruiting young people to engage in murderous illegal activities overseas." Its message to the Marine recruiters, which involved, they withdrew the letter that they had sent, but they claimed they were going to support our troops. You know, "We support the SS, but we sure wish you weren't in Russia." You know, that sort of thing, which is contradictory. It's impossible, I think, to have it both ways, in spite of the fact that the country has existed in that schizophrenic state, or that divided state, for the last 3 or 4 years, thanks in large part to our credulity in following the Democratic Party hacks who gutlessly have followed the Republican Party line there, or perhaps it's the joint party line, the war party line, as some writers on antiwar.org and counterpunch.org like to call it, two websites that I frequently consult. Anyway, I was meandering around with my tape recorder, as some of you regular listeners know, a week ago up in Berkeley, about 10 days ago now, on that Tuesday a week ago, and there was a large crowd of people, I'd say at least a couple hundred. Most of the people on the Berkeley City Council side of the street were supporters of the Berkeley Council's resolution, or even a stronger resolution, demanding the Marines get out of Berkeley and the U.S. get out of Iraq. The other side were supporters of the Marines recruiting station and opponents of the Berkeley resolution, and to some extent supporters of the Iraqi war, although some of them said they were against the war but in favor of the Marines and that sort of thing. It gets kind of confused. And in the middle, kind of, was a police presence. There were about 30 or 40 police officers there. Peculiarly, one line was facing one way. Another line, back-to-back with the first line, was facing the other way. One line facing the Berkeley City Council side of the street. The other line facing the Provo Park, which is a large park across from the Berkeley City Council side of the street. And the entire street, of course, was blocked off, so people were able to kind of... they used the street. They had occupied the street. They were singing in the street. They were talking. And a lot of arguments, vigorous, angry arguments, but nonviolent arguments, were going on between supporters of Marine recruiting and opponents of this war criminal type behavior, as I see it. I'm going to play some of that now. And then I'm going to read you something from Bill Simpich's article on Counterpunch, which he will then come on the air and talk about at 6:45. And you're welcome to call in and talk about, too. It's kind of some of the history that shows that how people power actually stopped the Iraqi war back in 1998 when Clinton was all set to do it, which is a little known piece of, well, a claim that that's a piece of history. You can make up your own mind as to whether you think that's accurate. Anyway, here's Berkeley 10 days ago in the streets debating. I should say a lot of out-of-towners and then a lot of local Berkeleyites, mostly the people who were supporters of either the war or the Marines or both, were our Marine recruiting station and opponents of the Berkeley City Council's resolution saying, you know, you're not welcome in Berkeley, and granting Code Pink, the anti-war group, a parking permit, which sounded a little unusual and in a way heartening, but actually is just a sort of a standard process. Anybody can get a parking permit if they apply to the city council in a certain way. So here it is.
And there's a man with an American flag. And walking back out in the street again from Provo Park, where most of the full Marine people are gathered. Hoax for Peace is the one-man sign. And the police officers are dealing with the Santa Cruz police. So here's some more police officers. They're kind of separating the crowd. Although they're not really. They're going into the middle of the crowd and forming their own little kind of concentric inner circle or oval. And it's not really clear why they're doing that. What are these cops doing anyway? Any idea?
I have no idea.
I don't either. It looks like we have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It looks like 35 or 40 police officers here with helmets and batons, boots, lots of gear of different kinds. And a cop just shoved a guy who walked up. That was Officer Rosario, badge 99, if you're interested. Officer Rosario is the man who just shoved you. You can ask to speak to a sergeant if you'd like. It's not clear why the officer did that. Except perhaps they want to assert their authority. That's always very nice. Maybe the crowd will unite and go after the cops. That'd be interesting. It's not clear why the police are using force at one end of this rally to shove at least one man away and just standing here. I'm not really clear on this issue. I probably should ask, but I'm disinclined to do that. I think there seems to be a little bit of communication going on. One female police officer has stepped forward to chat with another officer. There's a Channel 3 reporter going on about his propaganda business. It seems the police kind of create a more passive situation. Before, people were arguing and talking. And indeed, on the other side, you see folks talking to the police, whereas on this side, people are just standing here. Excuse me, step in front of the flag there. Any comments?
Very intimidating.
Well, I'm trying to be. So you're wrapping yourselves in the flag,
right? We are. Oh, yes. We wear it on our sleeve all the time.
So where are you guys from?
I'm San Francisco.
And you're?
Marin County, Mill Valley.
Okay. And just heard about it in the media and came down or got called by friends? Or?
Yeah, on the radio.
What happened? How long you been here?
I got off work and we got here around 5:30.
And what's your impression of the crowd? You talk to people pro and con? Or?
It's all very tame. The last time we were here on Shattuck, in front of the Marine headquarters, it was much more interactive.
Really?
Much more.
Now, do you think the police are responsible for stopping this?
Yeah. They're doing their job.
They were on this side of the street at the other event.
The police are the other side.
Pink. And all their signs and their bullhorns, they were on this side of the street.
And so, I mean, was there dialogue between the two sides? Or?
Quite a bit.
And I went over there and talked to a bunch of them. They were nice and
nice. What was your? Did you think they learned anything? Did you learn anything?
I think they learned a little bit. Yeah.
In general, I'd say no.
So you had different experiences.
Yeah, you did a lot more talking than I did.
Yeah. And today you're kind of waiting to see what happens. Going to go into the Berkeley City Council.
I don't think we'll have a chance to go in now that I see all these people, but. I would like to support the troops, the Marines, if I could, in person.
Well, thank you for being on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You've been talking with
Elizabeth Manning.
Jim Bitter, yeah.
And I'm Robert Barr.
And just kind of as a quick break here in the Berkeley Daily Planet, which is the free, I don't know, twice or three times weekly that comes out up in Berkeley, there's a story. It's also online. Go to Berkeley Daily Planet. Protests continue at recruiting center in Berkeley and in Mountain View. Story from the 19th of February by Judith Shear. Since the Marine Recruiting Center in downtown Berkeley was locked Friday morning when the World Can't Wait protesters arrived around 7:30 a.m. aiming to shut it down and risk arrest, the group and its allies from Code Pink and Answer, Act Now to Stop War and Racism, went to Plan B. They held a press conference, demonstrated, and called out to passing motorists with chants such as murder, rape, torture, war. That's what they're recruiting for. They chanted beyond the time that their 2 p.m. sound permit ran out, as noted in a press release sent out by the Berkeley police. A dozen or so police watched most of the day, and I remind you this again was the Friday after the Tuesday you just heard on tape. A dozen or so police watched most of the day without intervening. Stephanie Tang of World Can't Wait said she was in touch with the police and it appeared the protest could continue. Around 4 p.m., Tang said police told her, "The Marines want your signs off their windows." Tang told the planet that the signs had been there all day outside the locked office and that she could not make the others take them down. That's when a large number of officers moved in, shoving protesters out of the way, and removed the signs from the window, according to Tang. The protesters were held briefly in the center of Shattuck Avenue, and then the police left, Tang said. There were no arrests. Comment on this is obviously the police should not be engaged in this kind of behavior. If they're going to charge someone with criminal activity, then they should be prepared to stand up for it in court, but obviously they're not. They're simply acting on behalf of the, I would call the pro-war, some would say pro-marine segment, or the anti-protester segment of the population, as police departments sort of seem to be doing in all the cities. They come from a different kind of mentality, a different kind of base, even though you know, they're Democrats as well as Republicans. Zach Friend is an organizer for, I believe, either for the Obama or the Clinton campaign here in town. At least I saw that in the paper. Zach Friend is our local police PR man. I call him our own little Goebbels. Not Goebbels, the little, not a gerbil, but a gerbil, if you know what I mean. A kind of propaganda minister that came out of World War II and defended Nazi-esque activities. But not to stray too far from what I'm talking about. Before the Berkeley Daily Planet article continues, there were no arrests on that Friday, the protest outside the Berkeley Marine Recruiting Center. Nearby, Roger Young of Lake Forest, California, retired from the Army after 13 years, stood with a sign that read, "U.S. Marine Corps defending Berkeley's right to be a laughingstock since 1975. Already har. Police could not be reached for further comment. Meanwhile, in Mountain View, Grandmothers for Peace were at the Armed Services Recruiting Center at noon. They call it a career center, organizer Gail Sredovich told the Planet, noting that their action is in sympathy with protesters that have been speaking out against the recruiting center in Berkeley. Now I'm going to play a little of an earlier tape from the earlier at the Marines Recruiting Center, again back on Tuesday a week ago in Berkeley.
So we're up here in Berkeley, and it's, about 2 o'clock on January 12th. It's Marines out of Berkeley. You hear this group of folks marching, American flag at the end of the group, and they're walking up Shattuck Avenue towards the university. I'm standing on the corner of Center and Shattuck, and it looks like they're not taking the streets, but they are on the sidewalk. And they do have the occasional, sounds like they have a bullhorn. I see a bunch of big American flags, and it looks like, well, they extend over at least a block, looking like 60, 70 people. And earlier, there were folks who were down right across from the City Hall who were taking up the large park across the City Hall, as well as a strip of land on City Hall, on which City Hall is based, doing, I guess, preparing for the city council meeting. Well, we're here at the, what's the name of this park, David? Provo Park? Provo Park. The line of Berkeley police officers. Looks like 10 police officers with helmets putting on their gloves. It's about 4:25 in the afternoon.
And we are, this is the America Supports You rally. Big American flag up here. Proud of my courage, country. Proud of my military. Ashamed of the Berkeley City Council. And various, signs. I can't afford an actual sign, says one sign. And boycott Berkeley, says another. Don't tread on me. Your right are secured by whom you to protest is the very people are your right to protest is secured by the very people whom you're protesting. Sir, can you explain your sign for free radio? I just read it aloud.
Don't tread on me. Well, that's the slogan of the Navy Jack.
Don't tread on us.
Somebody stole my flag. Yeah.
I stole your flag.
Somebody stole my flag.
Okay.
I was in Vietnam with the communist downsizing division of the Navy.
Yeah.
And it's just that they're right over there. What they're doing is guaranteed by the guys who are protesting.
And then you're saying your right to protest is secured by the very people whom you are protesting.
Right.
And your name is?
Ken.
And Ken, where are you from?
Colfax. That's a pro-American sector of California.
And that's
halfway between Reno and Sacramento.
Okay, well, welcome to Berkeley.
Thank you.
All right. Anything you want to say to folks out there? I'm from Santa Cruz.
A couple of young kids said, you know, what are you doing here? Why don't you have a job? I said, well, I'm already retired. I've already done my share.
Right.
So that's what
this kind of work were you doing?
Airlines.
Say it again?
Airlines. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I retired after one of my planes was used as a bomb in the South Tower.
Now, so of course you know most people here on that side are concerned about the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
What's the feeling here about the war in Iraq, or is that an issue?
We're supporting the troops and the mission that they have to do. Having been in Vietnam for 22 months and working in the villages, we know what they're doing over there, trying to help those people. And they, you know, there's you can go in a long dissertation. I don't know how long your tape is.
Well, so, I'm kind of get a brief soundbite kind of thing, but the issue. So you support a continued U.S. military presence in Iraq
until the Iraqis can take over. The job.
50 to 100 years, let's say, as McCain has suggested, that's okay.
Well, but it could be shorter than that either, too.
Yeah,
so they don't know because more and more of the Iraqis are taking over. Their jobs are getting tired of these bombings taking place in their neighborhoods.
At least they're getting well paid by the U.S. military, one of the two.
Well, you know, you can
or both.
You can be spun however you want to spin it,
yeah.
Because you know, the other side's getting money from sources against us also. So it's just like in Vietnam, it wasn't us against the Vietnamese. It was us against the Chinese, the Russians, the Cubans, everybody else. So that's what. Yeah, you can go to anywhere down the line.
So are you here alone? Did you come with a group?
Yeah, this is my first one, 62 years old, our first ever protest.
Oh, welcome to the protest.
I'm glad you're standing up
for your opinion.
I
have the opposite opinion.
I gathered that,
yeah.
But you know what? That's fine, and everybody's entitled to that. And I don't begrudge anybody having an opinion.
Right. How many miles did you drive today?
I don't know. I think it's about 120, I think.
And this is because, did a friend of yours contact you? Did you see this on the news?
Well, I have young friends from Colfax who are on their second and third tours in Iraq, and I'm supporting these kids. And, you know, I just do it once. You know, I've done a little bit of a share because I'd rather be home writing those guys, packing packages that we do, sending stuff back to the troops, and that type of stuff. That's the kind of support that I prefer doing.
How many hours have you been here today?
I just got here about 3:30, I think.
So actually, you and I got here, it's 4:30 now. I was here a couple hours ago, and I'm wondering, are the crowds increasing, diminishing?
Everybody's saying that probably now that 5:00, people start showing up after work. So I don't know. I've never been to one of these things. I have no idea what to expect.
It's just the nature of the democratic process.
Yep, that's right.
And
here on both sides, here you and I are on opposite sides of the fence, and we haven't thrown punches at each other.
Certainly not.
Mark, my arthritis would hurt anyways.
Hey. Mine too. Take care.
You bet.
All right.
And that, again, is Berkeley a week ago Tuesday on the issue of the Marine recruiting station. Berkeley City Council said you're not welcome. It sounds like pro-war, at least pro-war policy or pro-Marines in the war. Anyway, you heard that point of view from the man who just spoke. Here's a letter, again, in the Berkeley Daily Planet, the free publication that comes out a couple times a week. Editors, I would like to address an argument made by a number of folks in the media and made last night, this was a week ago Wednesday, at the Berkeley City Council meeting. The argument goes, support the troops because it's the government's responsibility for the unjust war. I think this denial of troop responsibility is a denial of their conscience and thus their dignity. They exercise this conscience when they generate the habits that create the kind of person they become, when they choose to enter the military, and when they continuously choose to sustain their participation in an immoral and unjust war. The troops as persons are responsible. We might say they have less responsibility than government leaders, but they still have a level of responsibility which is sufficient to be judged for participating in immoral and unjust activities such as Iraq. The devaluing or denial of troop responsibility manifested itself last night at the Berkeley City Council. There was general consensus that the war is unjust, and they did a better job of articulating the depth of the injustice. Yet they were unwilling to hold the Marine institution and the individual troops sufficiently responsible. In turn, they buckled somewhat to the support the troops mantra and affirmed a right of the Marines to recruit in Berkeley. I respect the troops as persons and acknowledge the kind of courage it takes to risk one's life, but I think we fail them and ourselves when we insist on supporting their immoral and unjust choices. This failure is implied when we insist on supporting the troops while they fight an immoral and unjust war. That's Eli S. McCarthy from the Berkeley Daily Planet. And let's see what else we got here. There's a pro-Marine letter, which I'm not particularly in sympathy with, which talked about, as one who was raised in Berkeley, attended Berkeley Public Schools, and later served honorably in the Marines for 2 decades, I received word of the Berkeley City Council's condemnation of the Marine Officer Selection Office with both shock and disgust. The United States Marine Corps has a proud history dating back to November 10, 1775, and it was originally formed by an act of the Continental Congress. The Marine Corps has served with particular distinction in every American armed conflict, including the Revolutionary War. It is true the Marines are proud of their combat history. They should be, but there is one important fact that the Marines about the Marines you've either overlooked or purposely ignored in your revilement of all things military. In any given year, U.S. troops, including the Marines, undertake humanitarian projects and missions in nearly 100 countries. I'll wager that the Marine Corps has participated in more humanitarian missions and projects than combat missions over their 232-year history. I'd be interested in seeing the stats on that. To Marines, rendering aid is not the same as sitting back in the comfort of your Berkeley Hills home. In January 2001, Marines deployed to East Timor to work on orphanages, schools, medical clinics, and other structures to improve the quality of lives for hundreds of East Timorese. In November 2001, Marines deployed to Djibouti, where they assisted in the treatment of approximately 1,700 medical and dental patients, installed generators, solar panels, and sanitation systems. In March 2004, Marines deployed to Haiti to provide medical assistance, distribute water, and clear trash in the city streets. Also, of course, to shoot opposition people and to support the overthrow of the legitimate government, not mentioned in this story. In June 2004, Marines traveled to Guatemala to construct clinics, a schoolhouse, and other projects. Marines participated in the humanitarian efforts in New Orleans, probably not as much as they could have if they weren't busy killing people over in Iraq, and the surrounding areas following Hurricane Katrina in August 2005. I'm giving a couple of my asides. I apologize to the letter writer. However, we don't share the same view of the Marines. In May and June of 2006, at the request of the Indonesian government, Marines provided emergency aid to the Indonesian people suffering from the effect of a devastating 6.3 magnitude earthquake after a massive earthquake struck Pakistan and so forth. There's a number of, there's an interesting documentation or recitation, I'm not sure how accurate it is, by Ralph Casarda Jr. from Sacramento, California, and again, this letter to the Berkeley Daily Planet. The final letter I'm going to read had to do with something that, if I have time to play my interviews, which I might at the end of the Simpich interview, which is coming up at 6:45, you'll hear about this incident. 4 people were arrested in this protest a week ago Tuesday at the City Council in Berkeley, skateboard kids. And this is a letter about that. I am a 16-year-old sophomore at Berkeley High School writing about the events of today's demonstration. First off, I want to say the demonstration today turned into an anti-war versus a pro-war protest. In addition to the fact the demonstration was held right next to our school, there were out-of-state and out-of-town people protesting the war, apparently oblivious to the facts that started this, that is, the Berkeley City Council's actions against the Marine Corps recruiting station. Also, for those out-of-towners, it is clear this was basically a hate-on-Berkeley opportunity, and that in a totally cowardly manner they chose to vent their anger and hatred toward Berkeley and its minor citizens, that is, Berkeley High School students. Every day before school, at lunch, and after school, students pass through the park. Plus, this Plus, the city built two sets of double skateboard ledges in the park where all during the day students go and skate. Thus, we have come to take this part of the park as a safe and peaceful area to spend our time. But when we have the city of Berkeley allowing and setting up a demonstration in our peaceful area, it tends to aggravate the students who spend their minimum amount of free time there. As the pro-war protesters spent their time in the park, they continuously harassed the students who were there. During the day, it gradually enraged the skaters that as the anti-war protesters were asked politely to move from a four-foot section out of a total of 660 feet of ledges, the anti-war protester would not oblige the skaters' requests. Plus, they went to greater lengths to further enrage the skaters by verbally abusing them and calling more protesters to come to sit on the ledges. And I think that the letter writer from the Restless Letter means the pro-war protesters, but I could be wrong. After school, I went over to the park with my friends to skate, like we always do. My friends asked if a few middle-aged men would please move away from a small section of the ledges so they could skate. The men, in response, verbally abused them. We had been throughout the day harassed by the same group of non-Berkeley residents, hence I think they're the pro-war group. They called us maggots. They refused to leave, and my friend finally were so enraged that there was a series of verbal exchanges between the middle-aged men and the young high school skaters. Then the police came over and separated the two groups, but the middle-aged men continued to harass the students from behind the cops. As I witnessed my friends circle around to the backside of the police to continue, I saw my friends get pushed and then hit by these men, although I saw none of these men hit anyone. None of my friends hit anyone, and they say they did not as well. In response to these BHS, Berkeley High School students, getting beaten by out-of-town middle-aged men who were twice the size of my friends, Berkeley police, about 10 of them, came over and started hitting any students they could with their nightsticks. I was hit twice, and while I was pushed away, I watched as one of my friends was hit by one of the middle-aged men and as another two of my friends were arrested. I want to know why the city of Berkeley was not able to predict this outcome and why they think that they are free to presume such frivolous and meaningless gestures, to pursue such frivolous and meaningless gestures without thinking about the consequences. Why also did the police focus 100% of their aggression and brutality toward the Berkeley High School students and not toward the ones who are attacking us? Why did the city endorse the police actions which did not protect Berkeley kids but turned on them when they were being harassed and attacked by adults? The Berkeley High students were innocent bystanders in the whole circus, which was prompted by an irresponsible, self-indulgent city council. The Berkeley High School students had no place else to be and no place else they should have been at 3:15 in the afternoon. They had just been released from school. They had to exit school into this and then be the targets of out-of-town harassment and police aggression is really amazing and wrong. Why, in fact, does the city of Berkeley use Berkeley tax money to pursue ineffective gestures when there are so many unsolved and unaddressed problems, which are real issues to which they should focus their attention? Unlike a symbolic but arbitrary parking space, Berkeley High School is in need of books, supplies, and classrooms. Unlike those anti-war non-efforts of the city, a large percentage of BHS students are most likely going to be in the war in the next few years, and yet the city's finest turns its clubs on us, Conrad Petraborg. So it's interesting to see a point of view that mixes criticism of anti-war policies by the Berkeley City Council or symbolic statements with anger at the police department's inappropriate, as this person sees it, arrest of Berkeley students and actual violence toward them in support of out-of-town protesters. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And coming up shortly, we're going to have an interview, as I mentioned before, with a Counterpunch writer. And I'm going to read a little bit from something he's written, and then he will be talking about the same subject, or perhaps broaden the subject. And I'm just about there as I thumb my way forward, or attempt to do that. Seem to be having a little trouble with my computer, of course. Suddenly not responding. I will have to quickly shift to the other computer and see if I can actually get somewhere. Let's see if I can do that. Call-in number here, by the way, is 427-3772, in case you'd like to call in at some point. And I am hopefully about to find the story that I'm looking for. It's from a couple days ago. And I'm almost there. Here we go. 10 years ago, People Power Stopped Clinton in Iraq is the name of the story. You can go to, it's a February 18, 2008 story, We Can Shout, all at the same time by Bill Simpich. And Bill, as you will learn, or as you perhaps are going to hear right now, is an organizer with the Iraq Moratorium San Francisco, one of the supporters of Direct Action to Stop the War. You can reach him at bsimpich@gmail.com. And here's what he writes. 10 years ago this week, Bill Clinton was doing his best to get us, the U.S., embroiled in war with Iraq. The previous month, Matt Drudge had tipped off the world that Newsweek had prevented Michael Isikoff's story about President Clinton's sexual affair with Monica Lewinsky from going to publication. Clinton needed a distraction, and quick. Once again, the president invoked an all-too-familiar mantra: Saddam Hussein had to be stopped before he got his hands on weapons of mass destruction. Unbelievably, on February 18th, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Defense Secretary William Cohen, and National Security Advisor Sandy Berger visited Ohio State University for an internationally televised town hall meeting to warm up the country for a carpet bombing of Iraq. CNN and the Clinton administration joined hands to try to ensure peace and quiet. The university press release mandated that no cameras, banners, or placards would be permitted in the arena. Purses and bags were searched, and metal detectors were the order of the day. Outside, an armed personnel carrier was parked in an alley across the street. Only a relative handful of carefully screened individuals were issued red or gray tickets and were allowed to ask questions at the, quote, town hall. Even they were questioned as to what their question was and how they were going to ask it. CNN agreed that no one could bring notes to the microphone. The ushers included soldiers in uniform. Other uniformed soldiers were stationed in seats throughout the arena to cow anyone from challenging the protesters. John Strange, a public school teacher, joined a handful of activists at Ohio State University in forming the Columbus Coalition for Democratic Foreign Policy to confront the Three Musketeers. And again, those are Albright, Cohen, and Berger, the three Clinton administration officials. Basically, there were 16 to 20 groups, mostly students, involved in organizing it, said Sultan Salim, an Ohio State senior and president of the Muslim Student Association. Others, like former OSU student body president Rick Theus, had a plan B. Madeleine Albright had appeared on 60 Minutes 2 years earlier and was asked about the statistic that 500,000 children had died in Iraq as a result of the sanctions. She replied, that means the sanctions that the UN and the U.S. had put on the country, blocking the import of goods and the export of goods to Iraq. She replied, "We think the price is worth it." When she took to the microphone, people started shouting at her the moment she threatened to use military force. That pretty much stopped her cold. Defense Secretary Cohen got similar treatment. Berger was forced to admit, "We have a divided house." Then a no-war banner was unfurled. Then the initial question was posed from the microphone. "I am an assistant professor in the Ohio State University. My question is to Secretary of State Mr. Cohen. The American administration has the might and the means to attack the Iraqi state, but does it have the moral right to attack the Iraqi nation?" Much sputtering ensued. The evening's transcript, including the shouting, can be enjoyed at, and there's a website. CNN gave the fisheye to the questioners at the three microphones and pulled in the reins. Rick Theus's plan B was spoiled as CNN repeatedly refused to turn on his microphone. When he voiced his dismay, he was physically dragged away by security. As the questioners continued to be carefully vetted, the shouting got louder and more frequent. Carrying people out of their seats only increased the volume. Finally, CNN sought to buy peace by offering... CNN sought to buy peace by offering to let John Strange ask a question if his group would stop shouting. By the way, they never did. But the exchange was priceless. Question: "Yes, I have a question for Secretary Albright. Why bomb Iraq when other countries have committed similar violations? Turkey, for example." Applause. "Can I finish? For example, Turkey has bombed Kurdish citizens. Saudi Arabia has tortured political and religious dissidents. Why does the U.S. apply different standards of justice to these countries?" Applause. Albright answered, "Let me say that when there are problems such as you have described, we point them out and make very clear our opposition to them. But there is no one that has done to his people or to his neighbors what Saddam Hussein has done or what he is thinking of doing." Shouts. "What about Indonesia? Question. You turned my microphone off, Albright. I think that the record will show that Saddam Hussein has produced weapons of mass destruction, which he's clearly not collecting for his own personal pleasure, but in order to use. And therefore, he is qualitatively and quantitatively different from every brutal dictator that has appeared recently. We are very concerned about him specifically and what his plans might be. Do you have a follow-up? Question. Thank you. My microphone is off. There we are. What do you have to say about dictators like countries like Indonesia, who we sell weapons to, yet they are slaughtering people in East Timor? Applause. What do you have to say about Israel, who is slaughtering Palestinians, who impose martial law? What do you have to say about that? Those are our allies. Why do we sell weapons to these countries? Why do we support them? Why do we bomb Iraq when it commits similar problems? Applause. When Albright hemmed and hawed, Strange unleashed a zinger. You're not answering my question, Madam Albright. A few minutes later, Ben Theus, scratched and bruised, somehow got himself to the microphone at the foot of the stage to get in the final question of the night. Okay, first of all, I want to apologize for disrupting earlier. The reason I did was I was told by this person here that I would not be allowed to speak. Further, this is not an open forum. It is a media event staged by CNN. If this were a town meeting, if it were a school board meeting or some other town meeting in a democracy, people would be allowed to make statements as well as ask questions. Now, the point is, I would like to ask is, how can these people sleep at night? Because we are not going to be able to stop Saddam Hussein. We are not going to be able to eliminate his weapons of mass destruction, all of them. President Clinton admitted it. All he wants to do, Clinton said, was send a message to Saddam Hussein. If he wants to send a message, we, the people of Columbus and Central Ohio and all over America, will not send messages with the blood of Iraqi men, women, and children. If we want to deal with Saddam, we deal with Saddam, not with Iraqi people. Applause. When Albright responded in her closing remarks, "We need your support," the protesters shouted back, "You can't have it." The next day, pictures of Rick Theus in his green sweater were broadcast around the world, while the Clinton administration was covered with ridicule. When he was asked why he didn't support U.S. military involvement in Iraq, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak said, "Not even Ohio supports it." Clinton's war efforts had come to naught for the moment. On the other hand, lest we forget, there was low-level U.S. aerial bombing of portions of Iraq throughout the entire Clinton administration. But it was a clear victory, as John Strange later put it, 3 dead in Ohio. There was a moment 9 months later in November when Clinton came within 8 minutes of setting off an all-out carpet bomb attack in a desperate attempt to avoid impeachment before Sandy Berger got him to revoke his order in a last-minute act of sanity. A month later, Clinton finally fired a far more modest flurry of missiles on the last day of the House impeachment proceedings. Although Clinton brazenly dubbed it Desert Fox, it was better known as the sequel to Wag the Dog. It's important to remember that people do have power when they decide to really roll up their sleeves and use it. On March 19th, the fifth anniversary of the Iraqi occupation, thousands of people will engage in nonviolent civil disobedience in Washington, D.C., led by Iraq veterans and military families in the wake of their Winter Soldier War Crimes Tribunal. Hundreds of similar actions will take place around the country on that fateful Wednesday. In San Francisco, direct action to stop the war has been reborn and plans to return to the San Francisco Financial District to shout a message loud and clear. And I think we have a phone call that started to ring, but is it happening? Let's see here. Yeah, doesn't seem to be. Try again, caller. Phone line is 469-3119, 427-3772. That's the line for callers, actually. All right, let's see what we got here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Yeah, looks like we're having phone problems. Well, we may not be able to actually have our guest if the phone lines aren't working. I'll finish the story, though. The United States, this time around, the plan is for large numbers to expose and confront Iraq war profiteers such as the Carlyle Group in their own front yard after standing in solidarity on March 15th with the West County Toxics Coalition and communities of color against Chevron's Richmond refinery. It pollutes the surrounding population while it processes Iraqi oil. The United States has created a shambles, 650,000 to 1 million Iraqis dead or wounded, 4 million displaced, nearly 4,000 U.S. service people killed, and over 40,000 wounded and neglected by our government. Meanwhile, U.S. corporations reap huge profits as they put the squeeze on the Iraqi government to acquiesce to their plans to control Iraq's oil. U.S. citizens face a bill of $2.8 trillion, whatever that is, and a military budget that has got to be redirected to fund human needs. We don't have to be silent. We can shout all at the same time, no more blood of Iraqi men, women, and children. If we can take action together like the students at Ohio State showed us 10 years ago in the face of great odds, maybe we can find a path that leads away from this devastating winter in America and toward the promise that the vernal equinox provides. That's by Bill Simpich on the Counterpunch website. He's perhaps more optimistic than I am. And the story is, 10 years ago, people power stopped Clinton in Iraq. We can shout all at the same time. And this is by activist Bill Simpich, S-I-M-P-I-C-H, on the Counterpunch website. And while I hopefully wait for incoming calls and my incoming guest to call in, I'm going to play a little more from the protesters outside the Berkeley City Council. The largest raising of the anti-war issue on this coast in many months. And so while it may have been just a symbolic gesture by the Berkeley City Council, it had significant effects, at least putting the issue again in the public eye, however briefly.
Through the park, where I see from people that look familiar, but because I'm nearsighted, when I get closer, they don't look familiar at all. Honoring heroes at the holidays is one T-shirt. Their video cameras are plenty. Little flags, big flags. World can't wait. Iraq, get out. Signs are on the ground over here. Here's Iraqi veterans against war. Now here's the one with a plate full of military. We were one of youth to be a part of this. You're offering them toy soldiers. Now,
death and destruction. Absolutely. Don't you want our kids killing and maiming other children?
What is your name, ma'am?
Jackie. What's your name?
I'm Robert.
Hi, Robert.
And Jackie, are you up here as an individual? I see you have a T-shirt on that says "Make Art, Not War." Does this mean I get a hug
heart.
Or not?
No.
No.
Sorry, I'm.
That's not be. No, I'll be that way. You monogamous dog.
I don't.
So, how long have you been here today?
A couple of hours. I'm trying to find children in this area that haven't made the paradigm shift to end war and see if I can talk to some of the young people before they find themselves in this situation.
But certainly you wouldn't tell this to the Iraqi insurgents who are trying to throw out the Americans from their country. Would you would tell them to end war? Would you help, would you support their struggle?
Who?
Oh, you know, the many groups in Iraq that are attempting to get the Americans out of there with guns, bullets, and bombs.
I'm hoping we withdraw our tax dollars from Iraq really quickly.
But is hoping doing it? I've been hoping for 5 years.
Me too. But
so what I'm saying is you oppose military violence.
What?
You oppose military violence.
Yes.
But what about the violence of those resisting oppression? I'm posing some questions.
They're resisting oppression. That's okay with me.
Even with guns and bombs?
If that's all, what about rocks? They usually just have rocks. I think we're the ones who have all this. They have rocks and a couple of bow and arrows.
They've gotten more sophisticated in Iraq. They have bombs.
Like this. Nothing like this.
Well, they do have some rifles. They have rifles. I agree that the U.S. is more sophisticated weaponry. But I'm wondering, do you oppose violence on all sides, or are you suggesting that, let's say, that those on the other side are justified? Because I think they're justified myself. So I was wondering what you thought. And I know it's not necessarily an easy question.
I mean, if people are oppressed, I want them to rise up.
Even with guns?
I want them to rise up, however they can.
All right, I'm not going to tell you.
I'm not there. I'm not in Gaza.
Yeah.
I can't speak for that. I mean, if...
I hear you. So, we've been talking with...
Jackie.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you.
So what's been happening? I'm sure it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. Any comments about what's cooking? You've been here since the morning?
Like 12 o'clock.
Any peaceful but angry people? Or
pretty much, yeah. Yeah, basically everybody's just yelling their side.
Have crowds grown?
Good question. No, it's been pretty big all day. It's been pretty much...
And your sign says, God bless our troops, support them. Sorry, I didn't realize the light had changed.
Somebody had to give me a sign because of the way I look. They thought I was on the other side and were trying to push me out of the crowd of troop supporters.
Interesting.
So finally I said, give me your sign so you know who I'm...
So that's interesting. So you, yes! All right, now this is a man. We'll see if they push you out of this crowd.
Everyone
getting pushed around.
Me, because I got long hair, to be on the side of the pink the Pinkos. And it's not happening because I know very well that I couldn't have these crazy dreadlocks and smoke pot all day and live this crazy American dream if it wasn't for these soldiers who gave their lives.
Don't try it in the Marines, that's all.
I wouldn't join the Marines, but, you know, I appreciate those guys who are tough enough to do it.
Defending us from all those Iraqi something.
Hey, whether you want to, the current war, whatever, you want to be against that, fine, but the soldiers didn't start the war.
That's what it's really about here, I think. It's about against the current war. And I talked to
you
people over there.
You want to be against the war, protest the administration, the civilians that sent us to war.
But I notice that most people over there are in favor of the war, at least the people I've talked to so far. You're not.
I'm not particularly. Yeah. I'm not totally against the war. Honestly, my view on the war is we never should have left in 91. We should have finished the job then. We're not doing a good job of it now. Bushism is a disaster. But
our Führer, a disaster? How can you say that?
Well, you know, it's...
He loves liberty.
How can I? I don't even know where to begin on that. But, yeah, my point is Saddam Hussein had to go. I think Clinton should have had the balls to just go in there and take him out back then and do it with the right number of troops.
Well, they did kill about 500,000 Iraqi children with sanctions and the U.S. government's. You know,
that's debatable. You can blame. I don't know how you can say that we did that by sanctioning.
Well, you didn't do that.
I didn't do that.
The Clinton administration
did
that.
And guess what? The soldiers didn't do that either.
No, but
the administration did that.
But the soldiers are following orders. They are following orders. Now, that's the question.
All they're supposed to do is follow orders.
No, you got to follow your conscience first. I disagree with you there.
Well, I hear you to some degree, but.
We've been talking with.
Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm now on the other side of the street here.
He's always faithful.
And we have kind of a thicker crowd here of folks. This is right in front of City Hall. And World Can't Wait organization has some large posters. Troops in the Heart of Baghdad, Peace and Justice Committee is here with its poster. There's that guy. Make out, not war, says one sign. And there's a guy with the I can't afford an actual sign. And people are arguing with each other here. Code Pink, hating America since 2002, says one guy. And then there's a fellow with a revolution, why it's necessary, why it's possible shirt.
If you oppose anything about U.S. policy, you are treasonous. See, this is the freedom that you say we should fight for, that you are talking about. I'm a treasonous.
Do you listen a little bit?
Yes, I do.
I'm going to give you a really easy one. You say that we're hate, and they're not. Have you listened to the chant?
No, I didn't say that. Why did you hear me say that?
I just heard you say that the Marines are preaching hate.
The Marines are preaching hate. The U.S. government is preaching hate. We are calling our people to think. Think about the crimes they're supporting that the U.S. is doing.
But you think on a flawed philosophy.
Oh, no.
So there are facts. So you believe that if we get out of there, everything will be hunky-dory?
No, I don't. Because the U.S. has screwed up the thing, and things are not going to be hunky-dory.
But
the U.S. is not. The U.S. didn't go over there to make things good, and the U.S. did not go over there to save people, and they will not continue to be there.
The Crusades are the same war. This is not a resolution about the Iraq War.
That's right. This is the same war.
Your name is?
John Gray.
And you're with?
I'm here representing my son, who's in Iraq fighting for us.
Okay. Where are you from?
Merced.
Well, welcome to Berkeley.
Thank you.
Your name is?
My name is Kaylee.
And Kaylee, you're with your man here?
Or? He's my father, and we're here supporting my brother because he's an American hero.
Have you heard from your brother lately?
Yeah, he's fine and well. He served two tours in Iraq. He's proud of what he's done, and he thinks he's fighting for the right side.
Has he killed anybody?
Not that I know of, no.
Tell him I congratulate him.
Well, thank you. I will.
Thank you.
What was your excuse?
I get this guy's name, too.
What?
The Philippines.
Terrorist.
America.
Yeah. Terrorist.
Oh, they use that gun. Yeah, that's right.
Your name, sir. Your name.
My name's DeAndre.
I remember you, DeAndre.
The whole world has suffered under U.S.
Terrorist. Hey, Tom Bates, what size burqa do you wear? What's your name? You're holding up a sign.
Darnese.
Darnese, sir. You're also from the same place? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you think of this debate, and how long have you been here?
Well, when the city council, the mayor of Berkeley, stands with a group that says we support the murder of American troops, then that's an affront to all citizens.
Is that what Code Pink said?
Yeah.
They said we want troops out.
No, they had a sign, and they went to the recruitment center and said, we support the murder of American troops. And as a mom of a Marine, that was like enough.
Well, let me ask you a question.
I just want people to know that not everyone...
Let me ask you a question.
Wait. Not everyone in California is wacky.
No, I see that. I'm here. I've been interviewing
red-blooded
people.
Red-blooded.
Right. So,
people who love the country.
And again, your name is?
Darnese.
Darnese, let me ask you a question. Now, if French troops invaded the U.S. and were marching up and down the streets and we took up arms against them, would that be appropriate?
Okay.
Would it or not, what's your feeling about that?
Probably not, but that's not what happened in Iraq. No, the U.N.
You wouldn't be good to take up arms?
The United Nations had sanctions against Iraq. The whole world had sanctions against Iraq.
Sanctions, yes.
The United Nations approved our going into Iraq. The whole world, the Security Council approved it.
Pushed their unilateral action, but they didn't object.
It wasn't unilateral. Check it out. It was the United Nations. We went with a group.
It wasn't under a UN mandate.
Yes, it was. True.
Council did not vote for this.
Yes, they did.
Okay, what date did they vote for it? Do you recall?
I don't know the date.
Yeah, I'll check that out. But let me ask you this. Suppose the United Nations said the French troops can come to the United States and march up and down the street. Would you be on the other side in that case?
No.
You would say it's okay to have French troops?
No.
You'd be on the other side.
That's not what happened. Right. Why didn't Saddam allow people into his country when he was given the option? It was like, either do it or we're coming in. Why did he say no?
He did.
No, he didn't.
Well,
that's why we're there.
That's,
you should learn.
Well, we both have a different point of view. You've got to look at the facts.
No, it's not a point of view. It's a fact.
Well, we need to consult the history books together. Well,
okay, but don't try to change it. That's all I ask.
Don't change history. What? No, I agree with you completely. We should get accurate history. I agree.
Right.
So if we look at it together, we'd find out who is right sometime. We never will because we won't see each other.
But listen, I'm not saying...
But you would agree that if there were foreign troops in this country, you would oppose them.
Yeah.
Me too. We agree on that.
Okay. Well, would you like it if people told you what religion you had to be?
You know what? If we had a regime that was killing your brothers and sisters, would you oppose them?
Of course.
Would you support anyone who came in to help you oppose them?
Probably.
If France came in to save you, wouldn't you support it?
Well, I don't know about
if
that.
The government
If they stay for five years, I don't know.
If George Bush's
father was
beating the national soccer team into a lead pitcher head first, would you support someone?
I didn't hear the beginning of that. I'm sorry.
If George Bush's daughter were feeding losing members of their soccer team into lead pitcher feet first, which is a documented fact that Saddam's sons were doing, would you support someone coming in to help overthrow that regime?
Like I would support overthrowing the Saudis that we're allies with. Yes. But would I suggest we send in a bunch of military to do that to each country in the Middle East? No, I wouldn't.
Let me ask you a question now about Berkeley.
But I hear what you're saying.
If the government can say no recruiters in our town,
right,
can they say no churches?
Well, I don't think they're saying no recruiters. They're saying they're not welcome.
They say get out.
The Marines are going to ignore that.
What if they say no churches? Or churches are not welcome.
I'd say fuck that. I'd be out there with a sign with you too.
Right. What if they said no abortion clinics?
What if they said no war criminals in this town? What if they say Bush is unwelcome in this town? What would you say about that?
Well, I think that...
A lot of questions.
God bless Bush if he ever comes to this town. He'll need the Secret Service.
Why are these police having a line between... I mean, nobody is doing anything particularly violent.
Some of the kids are acting pretty violent.
Let me thank you for what you said. Recognize we have differences.
I appreciate differences, and I'm not a hater. I'd never punch you in the mouth.
But I've never liked Bush, I got to tell you.
Well, that's okay. I have my differences with him, too. I didn't like Clinton.
Right. I don't like him either.
Well, there's a lot, you know, there's not much difference between the two parties. But here's what I do know. I love my country, and I want to make it better.
I
love it enough that I want to make it better. And
yeah,
if we all stood together and said we can work to make it better.
What do you think of Ron Paul?
I don't know. Some things he says are kind of funny, but not bad. I don't know.
He wants the troops out of Iraq, you know.
Yeah, I know. But I like what he says about our economy. Like, we should just spend our money here, baby. Stop spending it.
Thank you.
There.
And again, remind me your name is?
Darnese.
So,
I want to put the criminal. Who is the war criminal?
So what groups are being separated? I'm missing the point. Why are these police here anyway? Nobody's going to attack anybody.
Well, there were everybody's yelling at each other.
Oh, well, it's America, right?
Yeah.
It's Berkeley.
It's Berkeley, too. I'm actually on one side of a police line, which is now on the grass in front of City Hall. There are police officers standing in front of the hall with cameras and so forth. And this police line is separating a group of folks who oppose the Berkeley City Council's resolution last month. And I presume on the other side, they support it, but I'm just wandering around. Nobody's bothering me.
I'm not friends with George. At least I'm not friends with George Bush, like Bin Laden. Bin Laden is George Bush's friend.
And he's a man with a banjo. Is arguing strongly.
George Bush destroyed our only buffer against Iran.
And as recent war issues are being raised. And we have a. Sorry. I'm back on the sidewalk again, walking
hey,
around. Well, hey, where's my hug?
Oh, my God!
Well, I've interviewed the pro-war, the anti-war.
Well, I'm anti-war, so you're not going to get much out of me. If
we're talking with
pro-war.
Identify yourself, please.
Tracy.
Tracy DeAngelis, in fact.
Do you know her?
Yes, I remember.
I remember you. I don't remember who you are.
Lisa. I'm Lisa.
Lisa. These are two ancients from Santa Cruz at one time. Have you seen any other bizarre Santa Cruzans wandering the crowd?
No, actually, just us and you.
So how long have you been here?
Oh, I worked in this building, so I've been here all day.
Is the police presence really necessary? It seems like people are vocal, but they're not violent. Is that accurate?
I don't think the police presence is necessary. They've been here all day since I got here at 9 o'clock. They're coming in their formation right now. I don't know if you see this with their batons and their helmets, and they're ready to.
The club both pro-war and anti-war protesters.
They just might.
Could be pretty exciting.
I think that they're probably pretty tired because they've been out here all day. Making lots of money. Lots of overtime.
Now why aren't you in the police department? Come on, Tracy, get it together.
Why aren't I working in the police department?
Yes, exactly. She's speechless. So I'm going to go over and check out this sign. Your suggestion, Tracy, the sign, keep your burqa, I'll keep my clitoris. And for those who want to, they can sing the Marine Anthem. I won't at this time. And so this is the other side of the police line. You can kind of walk around the police line. Eddie, where you're right, anti-military, UCMC Peacekeepers Against Human Rights Abuses. That's point of view. And we have some angry words from some women here. I'm going to try to get this on tape. I'm having a little trouble hearing this. What are you saying? It's a woman is putting on her orange bandana, and a friend of hers has a sticker on her sleeve which says, end the war now, March 19th.
Where are you from? You're not from Berkeley, are you? Oh, you're fake. You're not from Berkeley. Why are you here?
So the Berkeley police officers are standing kind of one facing one way, the next one facing the next way. Any comments on this?
I don't know. It's fucking bullshit, these fuckers over here.
Now, you're a local Berkeley man.
I am. I go to Berkeley High School here.
And what's your name?
What's it like at Berkeley High?
What?
What's this like?
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
What?
Free Radio, Santa Cruz.
Cool. Wait, what's this like?
What's your name?
Oh, Julian.
And Julian, how long you been here at this rally?
I got here probably like an hour ago.
And any unusual experiences, anything you want to talk about?
Well, I saw a seventh grader actually get pushed to the ground. His head hit the concrete. His head hit the concrete.
Come over here. Let me talk you over here. This is what you're fighting for. I'm sorry, it's kind of hard to hear you, but I think I can hear you over here.
All right, so I saw a 7th grader, a 12-year-old, get pushed to the ground. His head hit the ground.
By who?
Not concrete, by a cop. And then he was arrested, and now we're protesting the police station to get them out.
Name of the man victimized or the boy victimized?
I'm not sure. I'm friends with his brother, and his brother was just, like, furious. And
his brother's name?
I don't know. Sorry.
Do you know you're friends with him?
Well, I know.
You know him?
Yeah.
You know, now, here's some more police officers arriving with batons out. Looks like one
of them. Right now, actually.
Looks more of them.
And there's another kid named Nick who's right now in the police station. Probably, I'm not sure. He got arrested for nothing. He was scared. He was skating at the skate plaza, and a cop, and like the fucking Republican came up and like.
Looks like the police are moving people back.
Yeah.
And there's some tumult in the crowd. Police are pressing forward towards a tent here, which is an orange foot tent for peace. Police are moving on your tent. Watch out. People are being shoved into the tent. A whole bunch of people have fallen down, and they're getting up again. And police are pushing them back. They've created a corridor.
Yeah, what should be said here is that all the people falling down and the shoving was done by the police department, just making a unilateral decision to push people back physically without any warning, which they did later in the evening as well. Or they shouted back, or move, without giving a, you know, let's say a notice. You'll be out with the next 2 or 3 minutes. Please move back, or we want you to move back for this reason, whatever. Instead, just a sort of a military demand for immediate obedience.
Between the two groups, but that did involve pushing some people down. And the police were pressing on the side of the anti-war protesters. They're being pretty gentle with the pro-war protesters. I should say the anti-resolution protesters. Murder, rape, torture, war. This is what you're fighting for. And it looks like a lot of police officers in different groups. There's another group out here waiting to come in, another 10 or 12 police officers. And the street is now blocked off by people who are kind of, I guess the police have also blocked off the street so people can use the street in front of City Hall. I'm back on this side again because I want to see if the folks who were with the flags. Did the police do any pushing here? Was anybody pushed or manhandled? No.
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you. Pro war tester. Here's a sign, code PINKO, grow up and shut up is one of the signs on this. End of occupation of Iraq is on this. So how's it going?
Great.
Good. Anything you want to say for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
We're here protesting the military recruitment center. We're showing that we're people in Berkeley are against the war, people in the Bay Area are against the war, and the right wingers can't come here and take over and promote their war.
What do you estimate the size of the crowd for right and those in favor of and those opposed to the resolution?
I don't know. I've been in and out all day, and I know the size has changed. I mean, this morning it was about 50 of the pro-war people and probably 75 of the anti-war people.
Now we have several.
It's grown a lot since. I'm not sure how. It's hard to tell because we're all mixed.
Now, were you at the last council meeting when this resolution actually passed?
No, I wasn't.
And what do you expect is going to happen today? And does it make a dime's worth of difference?
I think we can set an example for other people who are against recruitment around the country if the city will stand up to this pressure.
Has any other city done this?
I don't know.
And in fact, isn't there essentially one weekly protest against the Marines, and they ignore it, and then everybody goes home and, you know, watches television and comes back a week later? Isn't that pretty much how it's been?
I mean, you have to keep the message out that the war, that you're against the war, that this, they can't get away with what they're doing.
Certainly one way of, this is a louder message getting out on the media.
Yeah.
You've been talking with?
Tina Landis.
Thanks, Tina. So we have an opinion on what's likely to happen tonight. Again, we're talking with Tracy DeAngelis. Tracy, what makes you think the council is going to take back the resolution?
Well, I think in their minds they feel that they have to because there's money tied to it. There's $2 million on the line that they will get taken from them if they don't rescind it. So, and I think some of that money is tied to the schools. So,
now, do we know that's a surety or is that just a threat by some right-wing congressman?
Well, I think now it's just a threat, but I also think it's what the school district did when they were threatened with losing millions of dollars when they were the last school district in the country to answer to the military recruiters coming out of the campus. It was at that point a threat, but the school district
caved.
They did, and that's what I think. I think Berkeley City Council is going to cave. I think they are.
And what will be the response of the patriotic citizens of Berkeley who don't want to see the city become a harbor for war criminals of all sorts?
I think the demonstrations at the Marine Shattuck office are going to get bigger. I think they're going to get bigger, and I think it's not going to stop. I don't know. I mean, I just don't
think...
Will
Tom Bates save us?
Hell no.
Oh.
No.
That's our mayor here. What are you saying?
Yeah, I'm not a Berkeley resident.
No, I'm not either.
Yeah, I don't know as much about Berkeley politics as I would like to, but...
Or perhaps you know too much already.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But I don't think we have much to be hopeful for. I think they're going to rescind it. I wish that they would change the language and keep the sentiment, but I don't think they will. Never when there's money on the line. Come on, Robert.
And actually what happened, looking again at the Berkeley Daily Planet online, according to the Berkeley Planet article of February 12th, council softens language, supports protesters. After being called idiots, thanked profusely, had their manners upbraided, told during a three-hour public hearing they were unpatriotic and true patriots, the Berkeley City Council softened rhetoric of a January 29th council item that would have had staff write the Marines, telling them the recruiters are uninvited and unwelcome. Council voted 7-2 to publicly recognize the right of recruiters to be in Berkeley, while underscoring opposition to the illegal and unjust Iraq war and differentiating between that opposition and those who are members of the military. And then there's a longer article about the protest and some discussion about the protesters. And the measure passed by the City Council was intended to publicly differentiate between the city's documented opposition to the unjust and illegal war in Iraq and our respect and support for those serving in the armed forces. The item says the city recognizes the recruiters' right to locate in our city and the right of others to protest or support their presence, and reiterates respect and support for people in the armed forces, underscoring we strongly oppose the war and the continued recruitment of our young people into this war. Without formally rescinding the request to the city manager to write a letter to the Marines, they are unwelcome in Berkeley. The council item concludes, with the issuance of this statement, there is no need to send the letter to the Marine Corps that the city council approves. So they're not going to send the letter, but they're not going to rescind the letter. And we like the Marines, and we don't like the war. And it's an unjust war, but the Marines have a right to be here, trying to please everybody like politicians do, but not getting to the core of the things, which is if you continue to fund these military killers, they will continue to militarily kill. That's kind of the bottom line on this. And the claim that there is some big threat that we need to have the Marines over there to deal with is, of course, major horseshit. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The call-in number here, in case you want to discuss either this Berkeley protest of 10 days ago, which you're hearing on tape thereafter, some days after, or other issues, the number here is 427-3772. Did get a call from Bob off-air, who is interested in drawing our attention to today's story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about the Measure K Commission and the... Well, as he aptly describes it, it's a puff piece. That's the commission that concerns itself with making medical all kinds of marijuana the lowest priority for police on private property involving people over 21. And, of course, the police, according to some testimony, aren't doing that. And the Measure K Commission, which when tries to bring the issue to the city council, is being shut down, shut up, and ignored, and also being essentially really ignored by the Sentinel as well, because... I'll be going into that in greater detail on Saturday, or on Sunday, I should say, when I'll be coming back with a longer show. And also with Vice Chair Eric Eric again. Eric, is it Eric True? Eric Rice? Eric Rice, I think it is. Larry True is the chair. Eric Rice is the vice chair. Eric called in, had a rather informative and substantial interview about I think it was either last Sunday or a week ago today, and we'll be talking about that issue then. In the meantime, also be advised that a week from Sunday, council member and shadow mayor, as I call him, Mike Rotkin, will be on the air probably from 10 to 11 to talk about the new Coonerty rule, which removes half of the city council's agenda from public discussion, or I should say puts it at the whim of the city council as to whether people will be allowed to talk about any of the items on the so-called consent agenda. It's interesting, and I think it's yesterday or today's Sentinel, there's also an article about a suit under the Brown Act, the law which requires open meetings. I think there's also another state act there's a lawsuit against. We maybe have to be considering something similar here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is Uncle Dennis. I just wanted to remind Free Radio listeners that if they wanted to make scoping comments on the light brown apple moth eradication program being conducted by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, they still have 45 minutes left to do so. The hearing is taking place at the University Inn on Ocean Street. So,
thanks for reminding me of that, Dennis. I did have that written down, but didn't mention it.
Well, I thought I'd bring it up for you, seeing as how by the time I get in to do my show, the hearing will be over.
Trying to take over my show again, Dennis?
I wouldn't think of it, Robert, but I will interject that, if you want to have an input into whether spraying is going to be conducted on a continuing basis against the light brown apple moth, now's your chance to get down and do it. Once again, hearings at the University Inn on Ocean Street.
611 Ocean Street, actually.
It's a good address for it. If you can't make it down tonight, folks should go to the California Department of Food and Agriculture's website, and that is www.cdfa.ca.gov. And if you hunt around or type in LBAM, they will take you to the appropriate place, and they will tell you how to make written comments, which have to be submitted by March 20th.
Well, thanks, Dennis. And again, if you missed that whole address, just go LBAM. Checkmate. I guess lbaminfo.org might have that information on it, right?
It may at some point. Does not right at the present time. Huh. Folks, if they go to the cdfa.ca.gov site, they will get the official information there along with the address and everything else. So, that's hopefully folks can get down there in the next 45 minutes. Unfortunately, these hearings occurred rather suddenly. This whole thing occurred since my last radio show, so
what?
I want to apologize to my listeners.
What a coincidence.
It wasn't my fault.
Yeah, sure it was. Dennis, have you been to the actual University Inn and Conference Center to speak yourself?
Actually, I am a representative for the Sierra Club on the Light Brown Apple Moth Environmental Advisory Task Force, so I was in Monterey this afternoon, and I submitted comments at that point as part of the Environmental Advisory Task Force.
And you'll be talking about this somewhat perhaps on your show in about 45 minutes, right?
Probably more like around 9 o'clock when I do the Earth First update.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Bye, Robert.
Bye-bye, Dennis. Yeah, of course, and if you happen to wander over to the University Inn, which is it used to be a big hotel, it's now kind of a housing for students, and it's at Ocean Street, about a block or two down from Soquel, between Soquel and Water, right, just that side of the county building. 45 minutes left to make public comments. If you happen to find any city council members there, you might ask them, since, it's all very well, and there's a lot of united fronts trying to stop the state from this spraying until it's proven safe and effective, which I think is a sensible approach. Since that might not work, and we're going to we have 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits who are going to be again subjected to the LBAM checkmate spray, with nary a word of protest or concern from the city council, and not much from the activists who are so up in arms about their own safety and health and the health of their children and the health of their, you know, their friends and neighbors, as they should be. But the city council can actually take action whether the state does or not, to declare, you know, open up shelters for people to go to during that period of time, specifically people who are homeless, declare that Coonerty's parking garage paranoia law, or the parking lot panic law, as I now call it, in its expanded form, that prohibits you from walking into a parking lot or garage unless you have a car or bike. That law can be temporarily suspended during that period of time, or it can be declared that it won't be enforced during that period of time. Very simple activity by the city council could show some concern for the health and welfare of hundreds and hundreds of homeless people. However, the homeless people are not on the radar at this time, and though this matter has been brought repeatedly to the attention of Tony Madrigal, who likes to wave the flag on this issue, he has not brought it up at city council, in spite of his promise that he would do something to that effect, and nobody else has either. An activist who tried to raise the issue at the last city council meeting, as those who may remember listening to my Sunday show, heard the entire issue was not removed from the consent agenda for discussion because there's a new procedure that only allows city council members to remove it, and Ed Porter apparently talked everybody there, or some of the people there, or made the decision he wasn't going to remove it because nobody came up to argue that it should be removed. That's the new procedure at city council. Not that you get a chance to remove an item and talk on for the 1 or 2 minutes that Rotkin's rule allows you. Rotkin passed a new rule in 2005 limiting the amount of time you could speak on a consent agenda item. But you can't talk about items at all. All you can do is go up there and talk about why you should be allowed to talk about an item without mentioning, this was made clear by Mayor Coonerty at the last council meeting, the substance of what you want to talk about. So you have to talk about what you want to talk about without talking about it. This I got to see. I have not ever seen this done, but it's, of course, the Coonerty approach. He's a civil liberties attorney, don't you know, up at UCSC and a teacher up there. This is how you protect the First Amendment while destroying the First Amendment. You know, we had to save the village by destroying it. Well, this is the new 2008 Santa Cruz City Council version of how to promote democracy at city council meetings. It's amazing. It's completely not only unconstitutional and a violation of the state and the federal constitution's First Amendment rights, but it's also a violation of state law. People, you know, both the Brown Act, and I think it's called the Siegel Act. We have a caller, and this could be our caller calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is a final courtesy call about the warranty on your automobile, which has...
Amazing. That is the same call I keep getting at another phone line. I have no warranty on my automobile. I've never had a warranty on my automobile. Will somebody tell these people to stop hounding me? In any case, call-in number here is 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm going to take a break from the anti-war interactions at the Santa, in front of the Berkeley City Council's building. And I think it's significant, by the way, because I think that kind of debating people in crowds, though it may sound kind of stupid and loud and abrasive, is really the heart of democracy. Far more so than Coonerty's letting you have 2 minutes at oral communications at 3 o'clock in the afternoon if you happen to be there in the first 10 minutes, or at 7 o'clock in the evening if you happen to be there in the second. In the first 20 minutes at 7 o'clock, that's what he's now done with the oral communications period. Although you're not allowed to speak at oral communications if it's on a consent agenda item, because it might be pulled off the consent agenda, maybe, although you won't be allowed to pull it off. And I suppose for people who don't know what I'm talking about in terms of following city council procedure, this is a little obscure. But what it all amounts to is concentrating power in the hands of 7 city council members who are pretty much at the behest of the city manager, the city attorney, the police chief, the head of the redevelopment agency, and the head of Parks and Rec, the highest paid officials in the city. And these are the people who actually have the most conservative views around the city. They're the city bureaucracy. They aren't elected by anyone, but they run things until we decide to take the reins of government back, to take the reins of the community back, as we did, for example, at the Drum Circle. And there's a quick report on that. The Drum Circle and the gathering of Food Not Bombs, which serves people free food, and just the general socializing that has traditionally happened week after week, month after month, year after year, every Wednesday afternoon in the parking lot next to the farmer's market at Cathcart and Cedar Streets, I guess it is, and which was threatened, physically threatened by the police, who said you can't do that anymore under Coonerty's parking lot panic law, parking lot 15-minute trespass law, and drove people away on two successive Wednesdays, and then one after that, after a break of a week. For the last 4 weeks, the people have come back and refused to leave, and the police, seeing these crowds, have declined to move in and give everybody tickets, realizing perhaps that discretion is the better part of valor, that they can run roughshod over individuals in the 20 other parking lots and 4 other parking garages in the city because people aren't defending them because they don't have enough time and energy to do that. But here, where the people are making a stand, they'd best soft pedal the fascism for now. And that's what it is. To treat everybody as a criminal suspect, are actually a criminal. You're no longer a criminal suspect. You are a criminal if you are in a parking lot or garage and you're not retrieving or parking a vehicle. That's really the bottom line. In theory, you have 15 minutes to park or retrieve your vehicle, and you can walk directly through if you don't have a vehicle, but you can't stop. You can't do anything else. You can't sit in your car and read a book. Even during the 15-minute period of time, that is technically, could be argued, as a violation of the law because you're supposed to be parking or retrieving a vehicle. That's the purpose of parking lots in, I think it's 3 of California's 280-odd cities. And odd it certainly is. And it's not odd in the Santa Cruz's weird way. It's odd in the Santa Cruz is getting more and more fascistic way. And fascism is a kind of a combination of things for me. You know, you can define it a number of ways. The main thing is police having much more power, police in collusion with merchants and people of wealth having much more power. It has to do also with the rule of police rather than the rule of law. It also has to do with the mobilization of the population to believe they should kind of internalize all these police rules, not because they make any sense, but because they are the law, as passed by the Führer, in this case, Führer Coonerty's council. And, you know, someone will tell me, oh, no, wait, these guys are elected every 2 years. Half the council changes, so it's a democratic process. And the answer is that the staff that really writes these rules isn't elected at all. And the people that are elected, I don't think, really represent the community in a meaningful way. I think, unfortunately, I'm sure that the positions of Obama and Clinton on the Iraqi war, one of whom is likely to get elected in the next election, has no relation to what the American people want, 60 to 70% of whom want out now or within a year. That's not the position of any of the candidates, of either of these candidates, however much they talk about the thrill of change or, you know, how wonderfully experienced they are. It has nothing to do with it. These are the war party candidates from the Democrats who year after year vote for the same military appropriations that fund the war, who refuse to sponsor a filibuster in the Senate, for example, that would have stopped the war dead on its tracks any time after November of 2002. Because there were enough Democrats, 41, to keep debate going so that the military appropriations for this war could not have been passed. And that's been the case year after year after year. You know, people keep somehow believing the bullshit that the mass media feeds us, that this is there's some meaningful difference. There's some reason to read about the Obama-Clinton races, isn't there? There isn't. There is reason to get together and stop the war. There is no reason to pay attention to these Democratic Party hacks. Maybe reason to show up in numbers at seats of government and make demands, for sure. But to sit around and play patty cake with these politicians or observe their careers as though they're stars or to invest them with any kind of hope, pretty silly. pretty darn silly. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. How's about a little more Mama Cass? What do you think? That'll be a nice change if I can find the proper tape. I think I have here. Cass. Now, last night, for the last 14 hours, for those of you who were tuned in to Free Radio, well, I should say between 4 o'clock on Wednesday and 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, the Free Radio Santa Cruz and stations across the country broadcast the Homelessness Marathon, the 11th annual Homelessness Marathon. I heard a little of it, and I woke up at 12:45 in order to talk for 10 minutes about Santa Cruz. And actually, I didn't really do much talking. The momentum of the conversation was carried by the host, Jeremy Alderson, also known as Nobody, the guy who organizes these marathons. He's quite a peppy guy. That's one of the main things he does, apparently. He probably does a lot of other things, too. He came to Santa Cruz last year with Mike Rhodes of Fresno and the late Pam Kincaid, the lead plaintiff in the Kincaid case, which found that Chief Ranger John Wallace's procedure of destroying homeless property is something that the federal courts will not tolerate in Fresno. We have yet, of course, to see our Parks and Recs boss, Danette Shoemaker, or her boss, City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson, or the City Council under Mayor Coonerty say, you know, we decide we have to be as civilized as Fresno and stop and direct Chief Ranger Wallace to control his rangers and his labor-ready crews and to tell people that if you run across a campsite, you can confiscate the property and you got to hold it for, you know, for 60 to 90 days. You can't destroy it. well, Ranger Wallace doesn't believe in that. He's a more, you know, he's a firm believer of spare the tent and spoil the homeless guy, you know, that sort of thing. But the homelessness marathon really was interesting. The parts of it that I heard, although, frankly, I've been doing this for so long, I get a little jaded. But for those who are interested, you can go to just Google for homelessness marathon, and I believe it'll soon be posted. If it isn't already posted, the previous homelessness marathons are posted. You can check them out. I did want to play for you the section involving the most important activist in the country, me, of course. And that's a joke, of course. but I did give the Santa Cruz report, and as I said, it wasn't really a report so much as a response to what Jeremy wanted to know. He kind of led the band, and I was kind of swept away with his momentum. But here's what I said in case you weren't up at 12:45 yesterday morning.
Hi, how's it going out there in Nashville?
Well, you know, it's colder in Nashville than it was last year in Fresno. Go figure.
Boy.
We're in the sunny Southland. Now, Robert, thank you very much for being on. I know you are the founder or the director of HUF, which is Homeless People United for Freedom and...
Friendship and Freedom.
Friendship and Freedom. Yeah. Friendship and Food, Freedom and... I don't know, but anyway,
foolishness
thank you.
And Frolic, yes.
And my understanding about the situation in Santa Cruz, now correct me if I'm wrong,
is...
that you're not talking about the kind of brutality there so much that you see in other cities, but you're talking about a gradual squeezing of homeless people where they're just not allowed here and they're not allowed there and they're pressured here and they're pressured there. Is that accurate or is there more to it than what I know?
That's true, although we have our share of brutality as well, though not as in the larger cities. That, yeah, we have a sleeping ban, actually one of the worst in the state, 11 o'clock to 8:30 in the morning. It's illegal to sleep or cover up with blankets. Not only on public property, but on most much private property as well. We're a city of 55,000 with about 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in space tonight, for instance, for 160 people in shelter. So it's very limited, and it's a $97 fine if you're not in a shelter if they choose to ticket you, which there are about 80 or 90 tickets a month.
And are people able to pay those tickets?
Well, no.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robert, Santa Cruz, this is the thing that is so disturbing, because the litany of supposedly hip places that are abusive to homeless people. You know, we used to have at the People's Republic of Santa Monica, and they just trash homeless people there. Berkeley is not so wonderful to homeless people, and that used to be considered, you know, next to Cuba, the most socialist place on earth almost, you know. Santa Cruz is supposed to be, you know, an artsy-fartsy hip place.
Yeah.
What's so hip about maltreating poor people?
Well, you know, we have our mayor, Ryan Coonerty, who's Mr. Hip himself, has passed a law recently, another kind of unique anti-homeless law, which makes it illegal to walk into a parking lot unless you have a vehicle or car there, and then you can only stay for up to 15 minutes while retrieving the vehicle. So it removes a lot of public space, which is a kind of the answer. It's significant because it allows us to form alliances with other people who aren't homeless, but who see this contraction of public space and this kind of bureaucratization and gentrification process going on and want to fight it.
But, you know, unlike Mayor Leon, who is opening up public spaces, the reason for the parking ban is that there are people who have lost their houses, but they still have their car and they might sleep in it, and it's really just to make it hard on them, right?
Yeah, well, it's not just that. It's to... change. It's sort of a culture war, because not only homeless people, but political activists, street performers, young people, there's an attempt to sanitize and divert a lot of money into policing services that really should be going elsewhere. It's kind of like a local war on terror like you have nationally. It's like a war on drugs where you give the police a lot more power to create the illusion of security.
Well, isn't it kind of ironic? I don't know how much of the previous discussions you've heard, but here we have Los Angeles where they're terrorizing homeless people, and it's, you know, now got a mayor, a lefty mayor of color. Here you have Santa Cruz, which is being mean to homeless people, and it's the, you know, kind of hip place. And the only place of the three communities in California we're talking to tonight, in Ontario, the one that's being decent is the one that's being run by a Republican. Now, isn't there something funny about that picture?
Well, you know, Democrats have always been major hypocrites in this. And you got the two major Democratic candidates, Obama and Clinton, who, you know, have got no real plan to pull out of Iraq. You know, they both want to increase the size of the military. And similarly, here in Santa Cruz, you have, you know, the alleged, you know, liberals are worse than the honest conservatives. The honest conservatives in Fresno have a better law than we do in Santa Cruz. I mean, Los Angeles and San Diego have eliminated their sleeping bans, but in Santa Cruz we still have a law that makes it illegal for a person to do what she has to do every night, which is go to sleep.
Well, you know, it's just an important point to make because obviously I can say that I am a more left of center person, but at the same time, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I want to be frank about this. You know, this is not just a left-right issue. It doesn't break down that way, and there's a lot of good on the conservative side. There's a lot of good, staunch, church-going Republicans who are doing more for the poor than a lot of the hip liberal people who are politically correct. But I'm not saying none of the left people are doing anything good. I'm just saying it's not the either-or situation.
Well, in Buena Park, California, down there in the L.A. area, you have one of the most conservative men in the state, Reverend Wiley Drake, fighting the town on behalf of the homeless. At the same time, he's homophobic. He's a big extreme right-wing Republican. But when it comes to protecting homeless people, he was arrested for housing homeless people in his church.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick call here. I got Lawrence in Arizona on the line.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
And there's a little bit more to that. It isn't archived yet, but there's a lot of interesting stuff that is archived. If you go to Google for Homelessness Marathon, and you'll be able to hear stuff from the 9th annual one, on the 10th annual one. This was the 11th annual one, and I think eventually it too will be archived. One of my favorite newspapers is the Anderson Valley Advertiser. I'm not quite sure why, maybe because I'm simply stuck on certain newspapers. It's a $1 paper. You can pick it up at New Leaf Market up in Felton. You can pick it up at Capitola Book Cafe in Capitola. I don't think it's much online. It's kind of hard to find, but it's a weekly paper, comes out of a town called Boonville, and it's got a lot of interesting articles. Very rarely there's stuff on the homeless, and there is an article called Personal Encounters with the Homeless I want to read, because it's got an interesting mixed view by Bruce Anderson, who was previously the editor of this paper. I think he still either is or he's now a writer for the paper. He didn't take a very sympathetic view toward homeless activists like myself up there. He thinks we're sort of artsy-fartsy, muddle-headed types. But here's what he writes about personal encounters with the homeless. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without home, like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone? Bob Dylan. Not too good, Bob, especially in the rainy season. And if it's cold and rainy in your personal life, too, well, there's just no getting out of the weather. 3 winters ago, the county of Mendocino put up a big tent next door to the Fort Bragg Police Department. The idea was to get the homeless out of the rain, Santa Cruz take note, because the town's sole shelter, Hospitality House, was full up and tends to stay full up winter and summer because it's the only one the length of Mendocino's very long coast. Even in the best of times, the occasionally hospitable Hospitality House doesn't have enough beds for all the people who need them. And Hospitality House screens its desperate patrons much more carefully than the most exclusive of the scented soap inns that Mendocino is famous for, the ones with the big ocean views. Those places will admit anyone so long as anyone pays cash or walks through the door with a valid credit card. Hospitality House and the rest of the county shelters reject all but the most docile of the doomed. So the big tent went up in December and blew down in the big winds of March with 40 people asleep in it. No one was hurt, but that was the unfortunate end of a promising experiment, a cheap means of not only getting the homeless out of the rain, but a means of gathering many of the most intractable into one place from which they could be directed to services, the euphemism for help, the thin rope thrown over the side to people who've jumped overboard or been pushed. And, of course, a tent at City Hall is a very good idea, as is a tent city. If anybody wants to start one, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. But to get help, you've got to want help. And those, there are quite a few people wandering around out there who don't want it, or want it only when the weather is bad, or are too drunk or drugged to want it, or too crazy to want it. Now, here is where I, of course, part company with the writer, Bruce Anderson. I think that he is now succumbing to the temptation to stereotype homeless people. The local, state, and federal policy is freedom of choice. If you're unable or unwilling to help yourself, you can stay outside, way outside in many cases, beyond all known social pales. The county of Mendocino is large in area, small in people, tiny in tax base. It does what it can, which isn't much, but the county does help support, or at least sanctions, a few places like Hospitality House, where 20 highly competitive beds are theoretically available in a neighborhood hostile to the people availing themselves of them. You want a bunch of bums standing around in your neighborhood? That kind of hostility, the unreasoning kind. A bunch of guys who look like Mitt Romney are likely to be much more comprehensively dangerous, but that opinion probably isn't widely shared. Inland, there's the crucial Buddy Eller Center and Ford Street, both in Ukiah, where there's some 80 beds, and there's Plowshares, a modern-day soup kitchen, also in Ukiah. A small group of Saintly Willits women, a few years ago, on their own initiative, formed the Willits Community Center, a multifaceted help center. Then there's the Methodist and Catholic churches in Ukiah, where whose parishioners also support regular assistance to people in need. For a county full of big building churches complete with big, fully equipped kitchens, Christians around here are long on talk, short on practice. Ditto in Santa Cruz, by the way. The county shelters don't permit people to linger. The temporarily sheltered must avail themselves of what official help there is or leave after 3 days. Bums, drunks, the drug dependent, and the merely incompetent have to make an effort to get themselves together if they're going to stay on while they do it. That's it for Mendocino County, about 100 beds, although small communities like Boonville and Covello manage regular schedules of modest amounts of donated foods, as do most of the outback villages. No one knows for sure, the homeless don't do head counts, but there are believed to be some 1,000 unhoused persons in the county, some of them managing by ingenious stratagems to live in their vehicles. The latter include, for example, an unemployed man who lives in his truck because he can't afford rent, but maintains a $50 a month health club membership whose showers and bathrooms he uses every day to keep himself presentable. That's the case of one of our homeless people, Sharon Pate, who's suing the city along with about another dozen homeless plaintiffs to end the sleeping ban law. She was ticketed for sleeping in her vehicle, legally parked in a private parking lot run by a health spa of which she was a member. She was found guilty, and she was sentenced to more community service time and a larger fine than was allowed by the law. We took it to a higher court and got that reversed, but there have been indications since then that referees like Kim Baskett, or now she guess she's a commissioner, the normal woman in the traffic court who does the sentencing, the trying, the sort of judge, jury, and executioner, because you don't get a jury trial for these kinds of sleeping ban crimes. She's also been abusing the law. Although, admittedly, when these things are brought to her attention vigorously enough, you can sometimes get a response. Sharon Pate is similarly a person who lives in her vehicle, and of course in Santa Cruz, people living in their vehicles have been increasingly squeezed by permit parking regulations, by no parking at night regulations, and of course by the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal just to be in your vehicle for more than 15 minutes at a time, any time during a 24-hour period in the public parking lots. County landlords increasingly depend on credit checks to screen potential tenants in a very tight rental market. Even if struggling persons and families manage to scrape together the large sum needed to secure an apartment or a small house, roughly $3,000 in the Ukiah Valley, and I would say significantly more here in Santa Cruz, a sum including first and last month's rent and typically an exorbitant cleaning deposit, their credit report often relegates the working poor to lives spent shuffling from shelters to friends' living rooms to who knows where. This is particularly true because now, instead of arresting people on warrants, what the courts do is they hold hearings where people aren't present if they don't show up for a ticket, a sleeping ban ticket. They then send the ticket south for an additional $300 fine to be added to the often $300 or $400 fine on the ticket, and that, of course, can't be paid, and it ruins the credit rating. And so when people try to go into housing and to pay rent, they find this like a huge chain weighs them down. One unpaid trip to an emergency room with an ailing child, a single unpaid PG&E bill, or even tardy payments to the vultures of credit card world and the landlord, going entirely by what he learns from a credit report, often dooms the unsheltered to life on the move. The seriously mentally ill, when they act out in the silly all-inclusive social work phrase, meaning everything from the screaming public memes to machete attacks on random pedestrians, and again, he's using stereotyping against people with psychiatric labels, are mostly dealt with by the police. It was pointed out that it wasn't Reagan who opened up the mental institutions. It was Kennedy who passed the Community Mental Health Act at the federal level, by the way. An interesting fact that was brought to my attention last night during the homeless marathon. Kennedy was 20 years before Reagan and 10 years before he acted in California, or 6 or 7 years. In Mendocino County, this is a good thing because the average cop tends to be a more realistically compassionate person than the average helping professional, of whom there are almost as many on the public payroll as there are aggregate numbers of persons to be helped. And there are countless citizens who operate their own private charities, helping specific individuals they happen to know or encounter. When Tennessee Williams had Blanche DuBois say, "I've always depended on the kindness of strangers," he made a true statement about the high incidence of random, unorganized generosity in this country. Lately, though, people seem to be running out of kind. There are too many unhinged, menacing people roaming the streets, staggering around drunk, shooting up drugs in plain view, panhandling. I don't think that's the reason people are getting less kind, but that's his view. And I don't even know if they are getting less kind. I think people are getting more afraid because of the concentrated attacks by media and government who are pushing this message. "I live in Boonville most of the time," Bruce Anderson writes. "San Francisco some of the time. Boonville is small enough to share to where a hurting person will not be left to hurt alone and certainly wouldn't be left to die alone." I wonder about that. "There are people in Boonville who are precariously housed, but I don't know of anyone who's camping out, which isn't to say there aren't any, it's only to say I don't know about them. San Francisco, though, is another story. The city claims that there are exactly 6,377 people living in the street or Golden Gate Park. There's a small army of Frisco libs who think that's just fine. But I have tracked a few homeless people in San Francisco," and here's where the writer and I really diverge, "because I see them all the time in the areas of the city I spend most of my city time in. I think, in their individual ways, they're representative of the people, city and county, lumped under the heading chronically homeless. The homeless people I've been watching, each in his or her own way, is absolutely intransigent. The only way to get them off the street is to force them into treatment, and the only way to provide enough mandatory treatment is to tax for it, preferably via restoration of the graduated income tax." And there's a picture of a guy with a shopping cart, "cash for weed or photos, $4. "This guy told me he wasn't homeless, but when I asked him where he spent his nights, he rightly told me that's none of your business," adding an emphatic "dude." "But he's at Fisherman's Wharf every day with his simple but apparently effective hustle. I watched him from across the street one busy Saturday afternoon as numerous passers-by either dropped dollar bills onto his cloth begging bowl without the photo or forked over a buck," I guess it's $1, not $4, "to take his picture. Cash for weed is probably considered a minor nuisance by some people, but he's a benign nuisance, takes up little space, never insistent, never hostile, unless you pry, like I tried to do." So then why is Bruce Anderson mentioning him? There are plenty of people with nasty hustles. We heard one on the phone to come into the radio station tonight, you know, about calling the radio station about a non-existent car in a programmed telemarketing message. Does he advise giving these people treatment? "I was startled the first time I saw Grunge Man. There he sat," and there's a picture of a guy sitting with his sandals off, with a beard and his head cocked. "There he sat, so thoroughly engrimed, so utterly nuthouse pathetic, that I thought for pure all-around despairing hopelessness, Grunge Man would give a Calcutta leper a run for the mendicant sweepstakes. And here he is, day after day after day, only moving from in front of 450 Jefferson to a covered walkway when it rains. I assume Grunge Man was nuts, one more institutional case left out to die from San Francisco's unique combination of civic neglect and its killer homeless advocates. He's talking about the Coalition on Homelessness, which I support, who think all Americans have an equal right to live and die on the streets, just as the rich and the poor both have the right to sleep under bridges. Actually, they talk about the right to housing, but until then, the right not to be messed with if you happen to have to live on the streets. And we in Santa Cruz with Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, have the same opinion regarding the sleeping ban. Dropping a buck on Grunge Man, I asked him if I could take his picture. "Thank you for asking," he said, in a very clear, resonantly basso voice. "Yes, you can. Most people don't ask." His quick, with-it response was surprise number one. I'd assumed the guy was completely out of it. I mean, look at him, sitting there rocking like an autistic, not even looking up as three remedial readers fly over him on their little bicycles, laughing as each just misses Grunge Man's scabrous skull. I thought my cash contributions and mannerly approach would have bought me some access. Grunge Man would surely unburden himself, telling me all about why he was out here every day in the 400 block of Jefferson, directly in front of the offices of fish brokers Alioto and Lazio, depressing the shoals of tourists who stepped carefully around him like he was a giant dog turd. Lamely, I asked, "Are you homeless?" He replied, "Thank you for the dollar, interview over." That was that. Grunge Man might be nuts, but I was naive to have thought he'd tell me anything, let alone why he sat on a heavily traveled public sidewalk every day, absorbing the appalled stares and huge helpings of audible disgust from the passing parade. One morning I caught the northbound 30 Stockton at Kearney and Market, and here comes Grunge Man jogging up in his flip-flops, his toxic sleeping bag jauntily wrapped around his neck and shoulders like a yuppie scarf. He bounded athletically from the sidewalk to the fare box, into which he dropped two quarters, the senior rate. Grunge Man was on his way to work at Fisherman's Wharf, where he'd spend another long day bumming out the tourists and scaring their wide-eyed children with his boogeyman presence. Doesn't sound too scary to me, but I'm not Bruce Anderson. And he'd make a little money from the minority of people who walked by thinking to themselves, "What have we come to this in our country?" "God damn," a black male passenger exclaimed as Grunge Man dropped his two quarters into the fare box. "Get him clear off of here." The Asian driver snarled at Grunge Man, "You're not riding for 50 cents. I piped up to say that I'd pay the difference, adding, "I know the guy, he's a friend of mine." The black man looked at me and laughed. "Then you need some new friends. I know a lot of homeless people, but this guy is the nastiest." By that time, Grunge Man had hopped back off the bus. It was the first time I'd seen him anyplace but in the dirt hall lotus position on Jefferson Street. I wondered where he'd commuted from. If I had the money, I thought, I'd hire a private detective to track him down. Find out all about him. The guy fascinates me. He's crazy, even if he isn't certifiable, because he's doing a crazy thing, a very, very crazy thing, and he's doing it right out there so the rest of us have to think about it. Maybe he's a performance artist. Maybe he's on some kind of weird revenge mission. Maybe he's the veteran I've heard him claim to be, so traumatized by battle he's intent upon becoming one with the earth before the earth covers him up for good. Maybe he can talk and talk well in crisp, clearly enunciated, responsibly full sentences. The authorities have obviously concluded that Grungy Man has every right to bring a little bit of Calcutta to the streets of Santa Cruz. He has the constitutional right to assemble, but what the hell redress is he seeking? I always stop to greet Grunge Man when I pass by, but Grunge Man must remember me as the busybody who's curious about him. He never answers me. I've heard him tell passersby that he's an ex-Marine. Others, he tells, he's Army. Here's Bushman, my favorite street act. He crouches under his leafy shield to waylay obvious passersby with a sudden growling and rustling of his foliage, thus greatly amusing the easily amused, me among them. Bushman has been on the same spot on Fisherman's Wharf for 37 years, and he says he makes anywhere from $100 and $200 a day, and he's always as amused as his audience. Bushman isn't homeless, he's creative. If all the homeless had an act, they might be more acceptable, but it's no act with most of them. And then there's pictures of a woman with all kinds of many, many bags, many plastic bags. The Bedouin, from whose faint, martyrish voice I assume is female, a deduction also made from the thin, claw-like hand she shoots out from deep within her multiple layers of rags to snag cash with the speed of a starving crustacean, shuffles up and down California Street between Presidio and the Palace of the Legion of Fine Arts. And I'm going to have to stop here. The story is almost over. It's a story by Bruce Anderson in the February 6th edition of the Anderson Valley Advertiser called Personal Encounters with the Homeless, because I'm about to have a personal encounter with Uncle Dennis, who will be coming in to do a show from the cream to the dregs for the next 3 hours. I'll be back on Sunday. Hopefully I'll be able to get Bill Simpich on. I'd spoken to him earlier this afternoon. He's the writer who wrote about how protesters stopped the Clinton war in Iraq, or the Clinton bombing of Iraq in 1998. You can read about that story on counterpunch.org. Again, his name is Bill Simpich, if you want to go to that website and find him there. I'll also hopefully be having in the studio with me, he's agreed to come, Vice Chair of the Measure K Commission, again, Eric Rice, and he'll be talking about Shanna Banana McCord's Sentinel puff piece. And we'll be doing some more on the Coonerty consent agenda, what would you call it, removal from public discussion. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides and remind you that there is a meeting of the Human Rights Organization that's on Saturday at 2 o'clock. So come to that meeting if you'd like. And stay tuned for Uncle Dennis, who is going to be breaking down the door any minute now. And again, as I said before, he's got a great show. He's got some fine classic sounds, some of which I can't understand, but many of which are quite familiar. And we're going to go out on one of those sounds, Mama Cass. 423-HUFF is the number to call between times, 423-4833.
I ought to know. at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find. Get my fair share of abuse. Singing words gonna vent our frustration. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Sing it to me. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You just might find you get what you need. Oh, baby, yeah. Oh. I went down to the Chelsea drugstore to get your prescription filled. I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy. Ill. We decided that we would have a soda. My favorite flavor, cherry red. I found my phone to Mr. Jimmy. Yeah, and he said one word to me, and that was it. I said to him, you can't always get what you want.
Yeah, well, if you're looking for a radio, you're going to find what you need right here. If it's music from the 60s and the 70s, I'm going to bring it to you. That's me, Uncle Dennis. You're tuned in to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also available on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. And, of course, it is Thursday night. It's time for From the Cream to the Dregs, and we're going to wander our way through the music of the 60s and the 70s. And, of course, the Rolling Stones that we just heard there from a long, long time ago. You can't always get what you want, but if you want music from the 60s and the 70s, you're going to get it here tonight. I want to remind folks who are interested in making scoping statements about the light brown apple moth, the California Department of Food and Agriculture is going to do an environmental impact report on their spray program. And if you'd like to have an input into how that environmental impact report gets prepared and what kind of issues that they are going to address in the environmental impact report, you need to get yourself on over to the University Inn. That's in the 600 block of Ocean Street, 611, I believe, Ocean Street, where they are having a hearing originally scheduled for 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Apparently, it has been extended until 9 o'clock. So if you were thinking about going and you thought you were late, there's still time. They are still taking comments over there. So LBAM comments on the environmental impact report for spraying. Get yourself down to 611 Ocean Street, the University Inn, and make your comments heard. All right, we're going to get back into the music here for a little more, a little while, and then we're going to open our Brew of the Week and, you know, do all the fun stuff that we do around here. Let's get to a song that was played by the band, but that's not the version I'm playing tonight. The version I'm playing tonight is off the Duane Allman Anthology number 2. This is a version of The Wait by King Curtis.